Welcome to episode 519 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by the DigitalMediaZone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. Josh, how's it going?
Not too shabby. You know, this week, we actually do have a little bit more of a mix of news. Like, it's definitely heavy on video and audio, but there is audio news this week, which we don't always have.
Right. So, usually it's just video and gaming.
And then very little gaming this week. Very little.
I am so excited about that. Well, we also have some feedback, and that feedback is video related. And Josh, I think I should read this because this is like close to my heart. Well, someday it might be.
It's and you understand close to your heart, but not to your house.
But not to my house. Right. Exactly. What am I talking about? All right. We have some feedback, which was sent to us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. And this is from John. John says, Richard and Josh, man, what can I say about the TiVo Stream 4K? It's somewhere between beta and alpha. It forces HDR at all times, no way to turn it off. Apps crash pretty often. Disney Plus bombs out. No way to program the power and volume buttons if they don't work automatically. I paired a Fire Stick 4K remote so I could power up and use volume buttons. Slow performance, glitchy apps, missing settings. The TiVo integrated app is nice at curating your shows, but that also crashes. There's so many issues, I can't list them all. Basically, they slapped a pretty good TV app onto Android TV. Unfortunately, they did not do the foundational work to make sure Android TV works properly for them. The forums are getting some action now that it's shipped and it's not looking good. Sorry, Richard, but this thing's a dud. I usually would hold on to a cheap device like this and hope updates fix it. Unfortunately, I think this thing is just too broken. Back to the Fire TV 4K stick, which functions great, but I prefer the Android TV interface. Probably need to pony up for another NVIDIA Shield. Wow.
Yikes.
Wow. That is a, I think I can say this, damning endorsement. That is just really, really bad news. I cannot follow up with any of my own opinions on this because mine hasn't arrived yet. It was supposed to be here on Saturday, but they shipped their devices by FedEx. My FedEx is awful. It's 4 days late now. Tomorrow is the earliest day it could possibly arrive, and that will be 4 days late.
I should order one like right now.
Shipping date. You'll get it
and
sooner.
See if I get it first.
You will totally get it sooner. I guarantee you. Yeah, my FedEx is awful. And I am so frustrated by this because I really wanted to spend time this weekend to check it out and be able to talk about it on the show this week.
Right.
That's one of the reasons why I bought it right away.
It's a conspiracy, Richard.
So a couple things here that I want to talk about. He mentions that HDR is on all the time. So that's actually not an uncommon thing. One of the things that we see with streaming devices is that you sometimes have an option to switch between HDR and not HDR, but some devices are just always on HDR. And that can be a problem if the interface isn't designed to handle that. Now, I hope that the folks at TiVo accommodated for that and designed the interface so that it wouldn't be all blown out when HDR is on, when you're just navigating through the different elements of the experience. So, you know, maybe you don't like that, but I'm not convinced that that's necessarily a bad thing. And if you don't do it that way, then it means that you have to just deal with the fact that your device could trigger the television to have to switch modes constantly And when it does that, it can have a pretty nasty delay. Like, I have my Apple TV set so that it will dynamically change rather than always being on. And I get these random just blackouts while it's switching modes. And it's annoying. And it even ends up like triggering some sort of switch in my AV receiver because it's all through the HDMI cable. So, I think that's something that is probably the least offensive thing here. Now, if their apps are glitchy on a standard Android TV box, I don't understand. I don't understand how that's the case. And worse, if there's slow performance, then that suggests that they picked hardware that's underpowered for the experience that they're developing.
Well, I don't know. It is an inexpensive device, so
it is.
It probably is not that powerful. There's a reason why the NVIDIA Shield costs as much as it does.
Yeah. Yeah. This is very disappointing. I hope that this is an uncommon experience. And I also hope, and I will, you know, I did say this in my response to John when he sent this in. They, TiVo, are positioning this as a preview of the device that they're going to be selling at full price starting at the end of May. So when they do that, maybe they have updates planned that are going to going out at the time that it's going to be more widely available. I don't know. I don't have any information to that effect, but I hope that they're using this as an opportunity to get feedback from customers and be reading their forums and trying to do something to make sure that this is a solid experience by the time that it is available for purchase, presumably in retail, in Amazon, and places like that. I will let you all know next week.
Hopefully.
Question mark? Yeah.
I really might just need to order one tonight. But if it's as bad as John says it is, oh boy, I kind of don't want to. But yeah, it's a $50 bet, so we'll see. And if I buy another TiVo device, then I'll get to hear my daughter call it the TiVo again every time I turn on the TiVo. Oh. You wanted me to turn on the TiVo? No, the TiVo. The TiVo.
All right. Well, if you would like to let us know how you pronounce TiVo, you can send us email at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com.
They pronounce it TiVo. That's the right way. All right. Let's move on to some video news. And a lot of these are going to be kind of quick hits, I think. So first one is CBS is making some changes for the better to CBS All Access. And CBS All Access, up to this point, is pretty much the service that I think most people have thought of as, oh, that's the streaming service that has the Star Trek shows, right?
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Not necessarily a bunch of other stuff that you might be interested in. It does have other shows from CBS, but it's kind of a mixed bag. Like, sometimes you don't get all of the seasons. It's kind of all over the place. So they are adding more content. And one of those things that they're adding is movies. You know, CBS, Viacom, they own movie studios like Paramount. So just last week, they added over 100 Paramount movies to their collection. If you are like me and can't ever think of a single movie attached to a studio, maybe outside of Disney, then Paramount movies you might have heard of: The Godfather, Terms of Endearment, Star Trek First Contact, Patriot Games.
The best
Games?
Of the Star Trek movies.
Is it the best one?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. It is amazing.
That's one of the older ones, right?
It's one of the newer. Well, it's one of the older ones. It's like the second wave. It's the next generation cast.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So that's all available now on CBS All Access. And then coming very soon, like June-ish time frame, they're going to be adding content from some of their other properties like BET, so you're going to get some music, and Comedy Central, which we could all use more comedy in our lives right now. And then eventually sports, you know, when there's sports to watch, I guess, because
right,
there's just not much to watch. So
right.
I think this is all good news if you're interested in CBS stuff. Richard, you frequently rail on CBS All Access. Is any of this going to be enough to get you to go back?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I have that free subscription that I got when I purchased the Roku stick, and I bought that really exclusively so that I could get the Picard, so that I could watch Picard in real time when the episodes came out. And I don't know. I don't think so. I don't see myself paying for any of these network / studio aid services. I'm not there yet. My head is too full of angst toward these studios that feel like, oh no, we have to do our own thing and we want to brand it. And so, you know, we have NBC, Peacock, you have CBS All Access. They were the first to the game. You have the HBO, AT&T, Comcast Play, NBC.
Well,
but there's something else coming too. There's another play here too. And it's bugging me. Like, I don't want to pay more for their content. I just don't want to do it. So I would like to see them come out with a free tier, because NBC is going to have a free tier and right. Peacock is going to have a free tier. But CBS has this legacy of this belief that you should pay for their content. And I just don't know if that's going to happen. Now, these are all good moves. I'm not dissing that at all. These movies, this is all coming from the merger with Viacom. And so that's a good thing. And we expected that their services would get better content when they combined them. But it's still not worth $10 a month to me.
So I think that if I don't point this out, we'll have angry listener feedback. Because you just said, I don't want to subscribe to any of these like one studio sort of services, but you do. You subscribe to Disney Plus.
Yeah, I do. I kind of think that that's something of a different animal. First of all, it's cheaper. It's way cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I bought in at a cost of like $4 a month or something like that for their 3-year plan. They're right. Not trying to get me to pay $10 a month for it. They're also not rolling ads, and they don't even have an ad tier. So you can be all in for Disney Plus for $7 and you're not getting any ads.
Yeah, it is really hard to beat the value of Disney Plus.
Yeah, and it is for all intents and purposes close to the entire vault.
Right. Right?
That's the other thing that makes that so valuable. It's content that has previously not been available publicly intentionally for usually decades at a time.
Right. All right. Well, our next story here is from the Alamo Drafthouse Theaters. Richard, have you ever been to an Alamo Drafthouse Theater?
I have not. I understand what they are. We have a similar concept here in this area with two private private companies, I guess, that just have each one place. And so there's like a Bethesda draft house that, in fact, couldn't make a go of it. Like, they ended up shutting down as a regular draft house theater and ended up becoming a kind of specialized AFI certified film theater. And then we have one in Arlington as well. I love the concept. Like, the idea that you can get served, you can have liquor or drinks or whatever while you're watching the movie. You have all of this space because you need to be able to sit down and eat. I think it's a brilliant idea.
I don't have anything fancy like this. We just have old school theaters that are all going to go out of business. So I've never been to a cool, fancy movie theater. But Alamo Drafthouse is one I've heard a lot about. It does sound really like a really nice theater going experience, but they're struggling right now, as are all of the theaters.
Sure.
And so while I'm sure that the story that we're about to talk about has been in the works for a while, the timing is just about perfect. They're launching an online movie service. So it is rentals and it is purchases. This is not a subscription thing where you just get access to some big catalog like Netflix or something like that. Think more along the lines of Vudu or Amazon video rental service here. The main difference, though, is the Alamo Drafthouse experience is supposed to be one that's more curated. Every movie that is available from this new service, which is called Alamo On Demand, is a movie that is recommended and backed by someone who works for Alamo Drafthouse. So there's a lot of like weird old niche-y type stuff, because they do, apparently they have a regular thing in their theaters called Weird Wednesday, where they'll show weird movies on Wednesdays. So it's a lot of stuff like that. And then a lot of, you know, think Parasite. Like Parasite is on here. And, you know, movies like that. So it is newer releases plus lots of older catalog stuff. The prices are kind of all over in the way that it looks like Amazon and some of these other services are starting to do, where, you know, some of these rentals were $9.99, but some of them were $4.99 and $3.99 and stuff like that. Just kind of depended on the movie. Obviously, more expensive for some of the newer movies. The thing that I find a little bit weird about it is I couldn't find anything on their website that hinted at an app. Like, I didn't go and check my NVIDIA Shield TV, but I bet there's not an app on it, or on the Roku, or on my Xbox back here. I don't think there's an app. So then how? Right. So is the only option through your browser? Because I'm betting that most people who are like Alamo Drafthouse fanatics, they're the people who have really nice home theater setups, probably, yeah. Right?
Or at least they're willing to sit in front of a TV, not just a device.
Right. So I am curious how that part of this is going to work out. I only looked at a couple of movies. Like there, I went through the new releases to see if maybe they had some stuff that Amazon didn't have or something like that. Saw there's a new release for some crime movie called Arkansas. I don't actually know anything about it. But they had it, so I wanted to see if Amazon did. Amazon does have it. Rental's the same price. So I think I'm probably more likely to rent it from Amazon, because I know I can watch it on my TV through my Xbox or my NVIDIA Shield or my TiVo or a Fire TV stick, you know, all of that stuff. So I'm not quite sure how well this is going to work out, but I like the idea of the curated experience. Other thing that factors into that, though, is would you buy a movie from this service? I don't think I would. I logged into Movies Anywhere to make sure that they weren't showing up there as a partner, and they're not. So it's not like buying a movie from them is going to allow you to watch these movies in other ecosystems. So,
yeah, I think that's tricky, you know, because they're going for something really specialized, and probably a lot of the movies that they are showing wouldn't even be in like the popular catalogs that you would expect in Movies Anywhere. So I don't know. I don't know how I would feel about that. I think that if this is appealing to a very specific crowd, then maybe they will be less concerned about that. But I would suspect they're going to do better with rentals than purchases.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, we've talked a lot about Android TV tonight. Our next story is, it's in that rumor category, which we don't always talk about, but it's being talked about it in multiple places from multiple sources and all that stuff. So it seems like this is probably pretty likely. Android TV most likely getting a whole new user interface, and I'm going to call it a new OS, or at least a new version of the OS, because that's how I've seen some of these sites refer to it. And the main thing here is that they're going to be switching away from the more app-centric model to more of a content-specific model. So One quote here from the article that we're going to link to from 9to5 Google says, the new user interface that will put a bigger emphasis on individual movies and TV shows. So right now, if you use an Android TV box, you get a horizontal tab across the top that's just app icons, YouTube and Netflix and Spotify and all that stuff. And then you get more horizontal strips that have content recommendations, but each of those is per app. And sometimes it's multiple strips per app. No screenshots of what this might look like, but frankly, it kind of sounds more similar to what TiVo is doing in their TiVo Stream 4K, which is an Android TV box. Now,
right.
I don't think there's any, you know, behind the scenes thing that's making those two things work together, but I think that's more the experience that we could probably expect out of this.
Yeah, and I think that it's probably a result of the competition, right? Because this is kind of the approach that Amazon has taken with Fire TV. Although, of course, on Amazon, they're favoring their own content or partnered content. And I really think this is the direction that these types of devices need to go. It's so classic and typical Android that, and yeah, send me mail, I'm waiting for it, that the whole experience on here would be apps. Because that's kind of the mentality there, that you go into an app and you do something. And maybe you have some sort of widget which might expose content from that app. But I truly believe that to get the TV experience right, someone has to figure out how to focus on content and kind of make the apps fade away into the background. That's what Apple TV is doing pretty well. That's what TiVo Stream 4K is going to try and do. So I'm happy to see this. I think we need more of this. I am rolling my eyes over the fact that they are likely renaming this to Google TV because, oh, good grief, there is a Google TV. It's right. Different from this.
Right. It incorporated Sage TV. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Yep.
That was forever ago.
Do you remember? I don't know if you were with me at this CES event, but I remember going up to a vendor at CES and they were showing a TV that had like this integrated experience and it looked kind of like Media Center, but it wasn't. It was Google TV. And I asked, like, so you have Google TV. Why aren't you doing Media Center? And the guy was just like crestfallen. Like he was all excited because he was there to talk about Google TV. And I wanted to talk about Microsoft's product. This is like 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Right. I don't think I was there for that one. But yeah. So along with the new OS rumors, there's also rumors of a new device coming out. Kind of bouncing back and forth on some of the naming rumors, whether it is going to be branded Google Chromecast sort of thing, or whether they're going to give it a Nest branding. I kind of hope not. That would be weird. But Google does all sorts of weird things, so that's, I wouldn't put it past them. But it's essentially what it sounds like it's going to be is, think the form factor of a Chromecast Ultra. So like a little hockey puck with an HDMI dongle coming out of it. But it would run this Android TV or Google TV experience, whatever they're going to call it. And that would mean it would also include a remote that would have Google Assistant, you know, search capability built right, right. into the remote, which right. is huge.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice.
So rumors are saying soon, like very soon, like maybe May or June timeframe for that. And that when that new device comes out is when the new version of this OS is going to come out. So then, of course, my question will be, what about us NVIDIA Shield TV owners? Are we going to get an update to the new one? Don't know.
I mean, I think that seems like a logical approach, unless there's some sort of new hardware requirement for this. But again, that NVIDIA Shield is a powerful box.
Right. It seems unlikely that there would be a hardware requirement that would keep the shield from getting it, because another thing in one of these articles said that Google is being pushed by TV manufacturers to make this OS work on less powerful hardware so that they can more directly compete against Roku TVs and things like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you can buy a Roku for $30.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you can get Roku built into TVs that are like $300. All right. One more quick video story. And I had mentioned earlier that I logged into Movies Anywhere to see if I could find that Alamo On Demand service. I didn't, but what I did find was that I got access to the Movies Anywhere Screen Pass functionality. We talked about this maybe 3 or 4 episodes ago. I'm not quite sure when it was. Now that they announced the beta for it. It is still beta, right, but I think they're allowing everybody in now. And just a quick recap on what Screen Pass is. It is the ability to let other people watch movies that you own. So I can go in, click Fast and the Furious 8, say I want to share this, send the link to Richard, and he could watch it. He would have 48 hours to watch it. It's limited to 3 movies per month that you can lend out. It's not like 3 per person or anything like that. It's just straight up 3 per month. Renews on the first of the month. It's also not the entire catalog. So I have 20 movies in my Movies Anywhere catalog, which I'm sure Richard is just laughing at. He's probably got 200 movies in his or something like that. 9 of my 20 were eligible to be shared.
And that's just like crazy, because it's supposed to be about 80% of the titles being eligible. So I'm curious what titles you have aren't eligible. Do you remember?
The only one that I can remember is my most recent purchase. They had Ford versus Ferrari on sale last week, I think, maybe the week before. So I purchased that, and that one was not able to be shared.
Huh.
Fast and the Furious was. So if you want to watch some Fast and the Furious, Richard, I'll hook you up with a code.
Oh, awesome. That's cool. Thank you. So I have all of those movies. Well, I don't think I actually have the 8th film. Anyway, yeah, I think this is by studio, but I don't know that we actually know what the delineation is for those 80% versus the 20%. So curious.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think this is good that they're doing it. I think the restrictions on this service are ridiculous. So I'm hoping that at some point in time that eases up a little bit. Right now, I just think it's a little bit too restrictive.
Well, come like Friday, I'm probably going to be asking you to hook me up with something, because I would rather watch a movie collection streamed from them than from your Plex library.
Well, yeah, particularly now with my Plex library being down, but we'll talk about that later.
Spoilers, so, gosh.
Yeah, I know. All right, let's move on to audio stories. And we have 2 Sonos hits here. The first is that we are seeing new hardware from Sonos. And this is a little bit of a surprise. I mean, we knew that we were going to get some software updates from them, but I don't know that people knew that we were going to be seeing new hardware until just about a week or two ago when some rumors started surfacing. So the first thing that I want to talk about is the new Sonos Arc. It is a soundbar for home theater, and it finally allows Dolby Atmos theater sound for your home theater setup through Sonos. That's really, really cool. It's been, I don't know how many years since they've had Playbar, and you could put speakers behind, but they could never do more than 5.1. So this is one of the new products that's going to be available. They also have a new sub that has supposedly deeper basses. It's the same form factor, ugly. And they have a new 5, which replaces the Play 5. So remember, the Play 1 became the 1, the Kinect amp became the amp, the Play 5 is now just the 5. And surprisingly, the sub and the 5 are the exact same price as before. They didn't up the prices. Well, they already upped the price on the 5 a couple years ago. The Arc is $100 more than the current Play Bar, which frankly, I think, is an amazing price. Because for $800, $799, you're getting a full Dolby Atmos projecting play bar, sound bar, not just the front sound speakers, which is what you got before with the play bar at $700.
That's cool. This all just, man, this is a lot of money for all this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Sonos equipment, the sound is really, really good. You know, this isn't like you're going and you're going to buy yourself a Samsung sound bar system or something like that that you can get for like $500 or $600 at the high end. These are really good sound products. And don't forget, they add to your whole home audio system.
Right.
And that's really that's kind of Sonos is what's the term I'm looking for? Trojan horse, if you will, right? Like you buy a Sonos soundbar and it's your soundbar, but it can also, for all intents and purposes, be your entire audio entertainment system.
Yeah, but that whole home audio thing, it's not nearly as much of a gimmick now that we have, you know, speakers that have Amazon's voice assistant and Google's voice assistant in them.
That's true. And that's a fair point. I think until we actually had things like the big speaker that you can get from Google, or the sub and the studio speakers that you can now get from Amazon, they didn't really compare in sound. You know, maybe, you know, I had said before that I thought the sound from two of the new Echoes paired together was better than you might get out of one Sonos One, because you're getting a more full sound out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I think that, you know, you are talking about a higher quality audio product here. So this isn't going to appeal to everybody, but for those who like Sonos, if you want Atmos now, you can probably have it. Frankly, I think the arc is a little late. I think that Dolby Atmos is something that they should have been thinking about 3 years ago, not now. But apparently, one of the reasons they did this is because this needs the new software. So let's talk about that, because that's the second story. On June 8th, Sonos is going to launch its new application and, if you will, operating system for its newer products. Remember, we talked in the past about how they're deprecating their old products. So first generation Kinects, first generation Play 5s, the Bridge, the Zone players, those older products are not going to work with this new software that they're calling S2, short for System 2. This new software is going to enable all kinds of things that these new products require. Things like your higher bandwidth, things like the ability to support more tracks. Is that the way to put it? To be able to support all of the audio that you need to create that 360 sound field. It's also going to offer new features and new capabilities to the Sonos system that aren't going to be backward compatible with your first generation products. So we're expecting this now on June 8th. It will drive these new products. So this is something that is going to be available and required for these new products. Here's something really interesting. Any product that comes out after, I don't understand the date, but something like the May 24th or something like that, any product after that date is no longer going to work with the old software. So that's really interesting, right? Like, we knew that the new software was not going to be supported in the older devices, but the old software is not going to support the newer devices as well. I guess I get that.
I think that makes more sense than the new software not supporting the old stuff.
Well, that's true, because you would have to update the software to even recognize the new devices.
Right.
Yeah, I guess I can see that. So keep that in mind. You know, I was looking around my house and I was trying to think, okay, well, what would I need to update if I wanted to go to this S2 stuff? And I think I've decided that I just don't care. Like I have Dolby Atmos. That's so far the biggest thing that their new software is going to add, the ability for that kind of audio depth and that sort of sound field. I don't care about that. I already have it. So then what else would I care about? Well, it's going to depend on features. And there just isn't enough for me to want to jump on this upgrade. So before everybody gets all upset and freaks out about the fact that, oh, no, you know, now we're going to be deprecated and we have to use this old software, I'm not convinced that's a bad thing. I mean, the software sucks. It's sucked for years, but at least it's still completely relevant. They're going to keep it updated for security. They're going to keep the music services updated, and it's still going to run your old devices.
Now, the problem isn't the software side. The problem is that you can't do whole home audio between S1 and S2 devices.
Right.
That's the thing that people are super angry about.
Yep.
And they should be.
I agree. And I'm not convinced. I still think that that's an artificial limitation. I think that is a prioritization of their budget, not an actual technical limitation, because we're really only talking about streaming the same stuff that you've always been streaming to those old devices and syncing it with the new stuff that you're streaming to the new devices.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, three more audio stories. We're going to fly through these, though. So the first two here are from Spotify. So the first one is an article from Engadget saying that there is new beta functionality, and beta means I don't have access to it, I guess. I don't know who does, but it is a new feature called group sessions. And the idea is maybe, well, probably your family, since no one else is in your house right now, hopefully. You know, maybe I'm casting my Spotify playlist to the TV, and Jen's here, so she might want to join in too. So I could send her a code, and from her phone, she could join into that group session, and she could add songs to the playlist, skip tracks that I put in there that she hates. I could do the same thing to her crap. But fortunately, there's a lot of music of each other's that we both like. So I think it would be an okay experience. It's probably not going to be a marriage wrecker in our house, I don't think. So I think it's a cool feature, but it's in beta. So like I couldn't even find screenshots of this. All I really know is it will be limited to premium subscribers, which is fine by me. And it sounds like there might be some limitation there, like you have to be on the same network or something, or maybe that's just like
that would make sense.
Like, yeah, if you weren't on the same network, you're probably not in the same place listening to the same thing. But
right, I think this is cool. I like this. This reminds me very much of an old feature that iTunes got rid of, that I think they called it like DJ or party mode or something like that. And you could basically just open up the current playlist and let anybody with iTunes on their phone suggest a song and bump it into what was currently playing. And I thought it was a really clever way of like managing, you know, if it was called party mode, it made sense because you're at a party and you want people to be able to request songs.
Right. Yeah. And I think didn't Chromecast have something like this, maybe with YouTube, maybe it still does.
I honestly don't know. I use my Chromecast so little.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't use mine a ton either. And then the other Spotify update is from the Spotify Kids app. It's a small update. It's not the update I was looking for, but it's an important one. So in the grown-up section of the app, which is the pin-protected area, the parents will now be able to go in and see everything that their kids have listened to over the last 3 months. And then they can go through that list of music and audiobooks and the other things that are available in there and decide, no, they shouldn't be listening to this. Now, maybe it's because they just think that that's questionable content that they shouldn't be listening to, or maybe they just can't stand to listen to the Frozen 2 soundtrack one more time.
I knew that was where you were going. I knew that was where you were going.
Yeah. So those are your options. Not saying those are the right ones, but those are your options. And then that history and the blocking functionality is per account. So if you have an account per kid and they're different ages and stuff, you don't have to worry about, you know, maybe you blocked something from your 4-year-old, but your 12-year-old, it's fine for them to listen to it. It's fine. It's totally separate block list. Maybe that's a good thing, or maybe that's kind of a pain for you because maybe you don't want any of your kids listening to whatever it is. But you've got that flexibility there.
Cool feature. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's kind of a necessary feature. So it's good to see it there. I'm still waiting on the Spotify Connect functionality, though. We're going to get like no use out of Spotify Kids until they give us Spotify Connect. I talked about this last time. We use our Google Home speakers to put on sleep music for our youngest kid, and it messes up my wife's Spotify playlist. There's not much we can do. I talked about this last time, and someone said, just go to the Google speaker and tell it to play sleep music or the playlist or whatever. Well, sure, you could, but if my wife does that, it's got voice match. So it knows that it's her, and it's going to use her Spotify account, not Spotify Kids. So got to get that Spotify Connect functionality in there soon before it's going to get a lot of use in my house. All right. And then our last story is from Spotify, or not from Spotify, from YouTube. YouTube Music, they're finally going to be doing away with Google Play Music and transitioning everybody over to YouTube Music. We've known this was coming for literally years, back when YouTube Music was first announced 2 years ago. They told us that eventually Google Play Music would go away. Well, it's going away this year. We don't have anything more specific than this year, but it is definitely going away. So they've this week released a new tool to make that transition easy for you. I almost said easier, but reading about this, this sounds really good, really easy, and really full-featured. This new tool, which is built into YouTube Music, will basically port everything that you had in Google Play Music over to YouTube. So there's obvious things like all of your playlists are going to move. Yeah, that's easy. All of your purchased music that you bought from Google is going to move. Yeah, that's easy. But it also includes all of the music that you uploaded to Google Play Music. All of that's going to be available. I have no idea how, but apparently that's going to be available too.
That's good. That's important.
Super important. It's probably one of the main reasons that a lot of people didn't leave. They're also going to be porting over, like, if you thumbed up or thumbs down music, all of that, you know, that sort of information is going to be ported over. Most of their curated stations will come over also. This sounds like everything you would want from this sort of ecosystem transition.
I love that they're sending your favorites and your thumbs up, thumbs down stuff. I mean, I think that is probably one of the things that annoys me the most every time I end up making any sort of music infrastructure change, is that I end up losing that information.
John in the chat says, what if I don't do anything? That's a good question. I don't know if they'll automatically migrate your stuff eventually.
Yeah, I would hope that they would. My answer was that I hope they don't AOL you and basically just keep on billing you for a service you don't need.
Well, I think that you're going to be forced to use YouTube Music. It's just whether or not all of your stuff is going to get ported over. I don't think you're going to have a choice to keep using Google Play Music.
Oh, in other words, would the migration happen automatically, or do you have to actively go do it?
Right.
Yeah, and what's interesting is, in this case, John is already a paying YouTube customer. So would he then automatically, would this happen automatically?
Yeah, so if you're a paying Google Music subscriber, which is what he is.
But he's also a paying YouTube customer.
Well, he says he's only paying for Google Play Music. I don't know how he's not getting ads in YouTube. Seems like he swindled Google somehow. I don't know how he did that, but yeah.
Okay. He's saying, oh, I got it. GP3 is clarifying that you get YouTube ad free if you pay for Google Play. Oh, this is also confusing.
But you don't if you just pay for YouTube Music. It's a mess.
Yeah.
Yikes. Okay. Well, I think you're going to lose that, John B. Sorry. I mean, maybe they won't. Maybe they'll grandfather that in. But I signed up for YouTube Music a few months ago. We talked about it, and I did not get ad-free YouTube. So you might be out on that benefit. But everything else, I think you're going to get.
Interesting. All right. Well, that's it for our audio news. What you got in gaming this week, Josh?
Not much. So you might have expected last week that I would have a lot, because we talked a little bit about how Microsoft is going to be having an Xbox event on Thursday. They were going to show off a bunch of third-party games. There's a lot of big expectations around gameplay videos and what is next-gen gaming going to look like. It was a pretty underwhelming event. And that's not just me saying that, which, frankly, just hearing me say that is probably surprising enough for a lot of you, as I'm a big Xbox guy. I want these events to go well. It wasn't great. Like, it was fine. It was just fine. We saw videos of, like, a dozen games. It hurt GP3's feelings, though. It didn't go that far. It didn't hurt me on the inside, GP3. But it wasn't great. Like, it's hard to convey what the new generation is going to give you, because so much of what the new generation is going to give you is things like faster loading times, things like that. And just a video of a game doesn't really show you that. Some of the games had graphics that looked amazing, especially the first game they showed, but most of it, I don't know, the graphics looked not that different from what I get currently on my Xbox One X. So it was okay. It was just an okay event. A lot of people really angry about the lack of actual gameplay footage. You know, they showed us, or they said going into this will be your first experience of seeing gameplay for Assassin's Creed Valhalla. It's going to be one of the biggest games of the year. I don't remember the exact number, but it was literally like 2 seconds of gameplay.
I was going to say seconds. Wow.
It was literally a couple single digit seconds.
That's nuts. So obviously, not obviously. I wonder, was this in fact a failure to have the technology ready to demonstrate, or was this a failure to understand how to play to an invisible audience?
I think the failure was mostly in setting expectations. They talked a lot about gameplay, and we did see some gameplay. There were some games where they showed a lot of actual gameplay, but there was a ton of just trailer-type footage. And that's fine. Like, if you think about what you see at E3, it is mostly trailers.
Sure.
You don't see a ton of gameplay from games. The only real problem here is that they told us we would see a lot of gameplay, and we didn't. So it was fine. It wasn't great. I think I said last week that they've announced they're going to do their own event for first-party Xbox Game Studios games in July. So we're going to have to wait until then to see things like Halo Infinite and the next Forza game and all that stuff. But it was fine. We'll keep going. Yeah.
All right.
Nothing from PlayStation yet. So we'll see what they've got cooking, but we don't know. The only other gaming story, also, this one will be even faster. Tokyo Game Show 2020 has been canceled. This is...
Speaking of Japanese game manufacturer.
This is not surprising, but it's like there's really a trifecta of video game conferences every year. It starts in June with E3. It's the huge one in LA every year. And then in August, you've got Gamescom in Germany. And then in September, you get TGS, the Tokyo Game Show, in Japan. And we've already talked about E3. and Gamescom being canceled, it totally makes sense that TGS was going to get canceled. Also, it's still just crazy to me that in the year that we're moving ahead in console generations, we're not going to have any of these big shows. It makes sense, and I'm glad that we're not. It's just kind of mind-blowing that this is still going to happen. Like, we're still going to have a new generation of consoles without any of the normal ways that stuff would get promoted. TGS would be a huge event for PlayStation, and it won't be this year. So
someone has got to figure out how to do some, how to get the right remote hype on this stuff. And I don't know who it's going to be. I'm really disappointed about the Xbox event, because I am concerned that these companies haven't figured out how to play to a non-existent audience. They don't know how to do it. They build these presentations with pauses, and they depend on the excitement and adrenaline and the cheer from the crowd. And I'm not quite sure how they're going to pull this off. And like, I think I've mentioned in the past, I watch occasionally Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. He is, I think, one of the few people doing a show that's gotten into a groove where not having the audience is finally working.
Mm.
Like, he's figured out how to adjust his timing and his delivery and his reaction to things so that they don't depend on feedback. And that's a hard thing to do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, there was an event just today. Last week, we talked about that Summer Game Fest that Jeff Keighley's putting on, which is really just a Google calendar of these types of events. And so there was one today that Jeff hosted. And I think this was EA. I can't remember the studio, but they're doing a remake, or really a remaster, of the Tony Hawk Pro Skater games from the original PlayStation. It's cool. The event also wasn't great. And when you watch it on YouTube, like, they would have, I think really the biggest problem that I had with today's event wasn't that it was basically just a televised Zoom call. It was more that the live chat makes these things terrible, because there's 50,000 people in the chat. So it's just scrolling so fast that you can barely even read it anyway. So I don't know why anybody's typing anything, but it's mostly just the jerks. Like, it was just people saying, you know, like, a bunch of messages about how they don't care about this game and how this is a loser and this is a stinker and all this stuff. Like, if you don't care about Tony Hawk Pro Skater, then close the stream and stop commenting. No one cares. Like, move on. But if this was E3 and it was a 3-minute segment on Tony Hawk Pro Skater out of an hour and a half long press conference, that's a different thing. But all of the publishers are going to be trying to do this. Ubisoft did announce that they're going to be doing a big event. All of the big guys are doing this. So hopefully by late June, July timeframe, these companies will have figured out a way to make this better.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. I honestly feel like Microsoft has the leg up there. We'll see if they can pull it off.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, that is it for our gaming news this week. If you didn't hear what the free games with gold are and PlayStation Plus games, all the links are in the show notes for that stuff, but we covered all that last week. So, Richard, what is going on in your entertainment center?
Well, no TiVo stream, that's for sure, but my new Synology box did arrive.
Yay.
Yay. So that has been my latest time suck. That has been where I've been spending an enormous amount of time. And it's just not a matter of throwing drives in it and turning it on. No, of course not. I have things I need to do. I need to move stuff around. So I'm just going to like tick through a couple of the things that I've done to ready this box, because ultimately this is going to be an entertainment and media server to take the place of my Windows Media Server. But in the short term, You may remember I had mentioned that I have a Drobo that is reaching capacity. And one of the reasons it's reaching capacity isn't because of the drives that were in it. It's because you could only previously format a Drobo drive to 16 terabytes. And I'm now starting to hit up against that limit. So I have wanted to be able to reformat my Drobo. And to do that, that means I have to have some place to put all the movies that were on the Drobo. So the first thing I did was basically I threw a bunch of drives that I had, spare drives, into the Synology, made a JBOD, just a big old disk, out of the Synology, and moved everything that was on my Drobo over to the Synology. Now I can reformat, but if I'm going to do that, I have 3 6-terabyte drives in my Drobo and a 4 and a 5. So why don't I take the 4 and 5 out, just make them all 6 terabytes. I bought 2 new red 6-terabyte drives. Well, turns out that when you buy a red drive now, a Western Digital red drive, they are SMR, which means that they use a different way of storing and writing media or content onto the physical media, which is less efficient and not well suited for NAS devices. They're red drives. They're made for NAS devices. But for some reason, they've come out with this new way of doing things on these devices. So now, if you want the original red drives that can work as efficiently as the old red drives, you have to buy the red pros. I didn't know that until I already had them and stuck them in my Drobo.
John in the chat is saying that the 10 terabyte versions of the reds are not SMR.
Yeah, I think he's absolutely right. The 10 terabyte versions, I believe, are more than twice what I paid for the 6 terabyte drives, because that's how drive pricing goes, you know. So, but that is something to consider. I mean, I could look into that. So I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do. I did a lot of reading on it, and they're like, well, it might work. And then there are a lot of things on Drobo that say that, well, it doesn't really work right. The Drobo actually recognizes these drives as old, or not as old, as SSDs. Like, well, what's that about? That's a bug. That's what that is. That's a bug. And they haven't fixed it. Instead of fixing it, they've taken these drives off the recommended drive list.
Wow.
Yeah. So that kind of sucks. Now, when I was moving the content off of my old Drobo drives onto the Synology, that was initially so insanely slow. I'm like, what is going on here? I have a gigabit switch. This should not be this ridiculously slow. Well, turns out I didn't have a Cat 5e cable connected to the new device. I had just swapped in whatever cable was free, and it was a Cat 5. It matters.
When you're moving that much data, it does.
Order of magnitude improvement. It matters. So I finally fixed that. And then I ended up realizing, okay, well, if I'm going to be moving everything, I want to also back some stuff up that is on my Windows home server, because I'm going to offload some stuff onto my Windows home server. I was moving stuff all over the place. So I have like 3 or 4 different portable drives and high capacity SSD thumb drive things and just all kinds of stuff with data, just data from various things. Like, I backed up my photos multiple times, and I backed up my music because I didn't want to risk messing that up. And then I went to copy everything back to the newly formatted Drobo. And it was going great. It's going great. I got 10 terabytes in, and now it's failing on all kinds of stuff. Every time I try and move anything big to it, it's failing. And I don't know why. but the only thing that's weird about it is that I have these drives that are questionable. So I'd swapped one out and put one of the old ones back in, and I'm going to do the same thing once that is finished adjusting everything and put the other old one back in and see if that fixes the problem. And if it is, then I guess I have to return these SMR drives. I don't quite understand. I don't know why they are less efficient, but apparently they are. And if it's the problem, I'm actually hoping that's the problem, because that will be an easy fix. Like, if I'm having other problems with my Drobo now, I wasn't ready to replace that, and the Synology is not designed to replace the Drobo. So I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do there.
So you wouldn't just stick those new drives in the Synology?
Well, but they're drives that are not designed to work on a NAS. I mean, they are designed to work on a NAS, according to Western Digital, but everything that I've read about them says that they're not well optimized for a NAS, which is just infuriating. Like, they ended up taking a lot of crap about this because they didn't disclose that they changed the way that these disks worked when they first came out with them.
So what are people recommending now?
The Pros, that you buy the Red Pros.
Those are really expensive.
Or like John is saying, that you buy the larger one, you buy the ones that aren't yet SMR.
Does Seagate not have a good option, or are we still avoiding Seagate?
I will never buy another Seagate. I have been burned too many times.
Yeah.
I will never do it. Yeah. John in the chat says Seagate is never a good option. I agree.
Doesn't Toshiba or somebody like that make good ones?
Toshiba and Seagate are one in the same company now.
Oh, okay. I'll shut up and leave it to the experts.
So anyway, yeah. All right. So that is that. My movie server's down, but luckily we have lots of online services and we have Movies Anywhere, so a lot of my stuff is available, but not to those who would be sharing my Plex library right now. In terms of watching content, a lot of content. Caught up on The Flash. Like I said, watching Last Week Tonight, that's been getting better and better. Also, watched the most recent version of the Saturday Night Live at Home. I think that's the last one of the season. Man, you would think that would get better over time. And the thing that should be best of all, the weekend report or whatever it's called that they do with the news, you'd think that would be the easiest thing to get right. But it was so obvious, it was so painfully obvious this week, that they did not actually record it together.
Mm.
And I'm like, what were they thinking? Because it was painfully awkward, because he was reacting to nothing. So I don't know what that was about. I finished Better Call Saul season 5. So good. So good. I think probably the best season of Better Call Saul yet. So I'm really glad that I binged it too. I enjoyed it thoroughly, and I was able to just like watch one every night. Then just watch the most recent episode of The Conners. Josh, you probably don't have this problem as much, but this is one of those things where I'm watching this TV show that, unlike Better Call Saul, which is like a big, like a movie kind of budget, and you're moving all over the place, and it doesn't feel like you're watching someone in their home. The Conners, you're watching someone in their home. And it is so weird watching someone in their home doing all the things that we're not allowed to do right now.
Right.
It's just so bizarre. Like, my gut reaction when I see someone come in the front door, when I see them go to hug someone, is like, what are you doing?
Yeah, when is that going to not be a thing for us?
I don't know.
Ever?
I don't know. Weird. Speaking of people being too close together, I watched a couple more episodes of Extreme Home Makeover, and that is really just because it's a feel-good thing. I need some feel-good stuff. So also on the feel-good stuff, I watched the first two episodes of Disney Insider. This is, for lack of a better way of putting it, each episode is like a 15-minute montage of three behind-the-scenes things that they've filmed, having to do with Disney, whatever, TV shows, movies, parks, anything that's Disney. And it's kind of interesting. I'm enjoying it. And then I also started, and this is, I make fun of me. Y'all are allowed to make fun of me for this. So Netflix has a series called Dolly Parton's Heartstrings. Now, you know, I like country music. I'm a Dolly Parton fan. These are, for lack of a better way of describing them, 64-minute compressed Lifetime movies. Like, these are...
Oh, that sounds terrible.
But they're actually good. Because
I don't believe you.
So, I don't personally watch Lifetime movies, but my mother used to watch Lifetime movies. Always be on when I went over to their house. Drove me crazy. Because they're always maudlin and everybody's unhappy and they're just so slow. These are fast told stories. They're actually really good stories. Like, they make you feel good. And they're based, each one of them is based on a song that she wrote. And so, you know, it's just along those things that I want to watch stuff that makes me feel good. These make me feel good. So I would recommend them to anybody that likes Dolly Parton. Worth the watch. Speaking of stuff that makes you feel good, God, if you're not watching John Krasinski's SGN on YouTube, just shut up. Just shut up now and go watch SGN on YouTube. Oh my God, talk about feel good. Have you seen any of this, Josh?
I hate to admit it, but I think I watched the first few minutes of the very first one. I came down this morning and Jen was watching the most recent one and she's like, have you seen this? And I'm like, no. She's like, it's so good. You have to watch it. I'm like,
she was posting about it.
Was she?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It was great. I mean, this guy is connected. He just manages to get all of these different people in Hollywood that he's had some sort of exposure to come on and do stuff. And basically just do stuff where they're surprising guests on the show. And it's just, it's all intentionally cheap and he sounds awful. And he has this hand-drawn sign that's his logo that his kid made. And it's a thing and you love it because it's just what it is. And I like, why him? Why is he the one doing this? But it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I just had a scary thought. How much longer is it going to be before this podcast has to change what it looks like, where you and I'll do the first part of this show together, covering all the latest tech news, and then we're going to get to what's going on in our entertainment centers, and I'm just going to duck out, and Jen's going to take over, because everyone cares about what Jen is watching. No one cares about what I'm watching.
I thought that you were going to say that we were going to have to degrade our audio quality and video quality to be less professional so that it looked like all the professional stuff that's out there.
Oh, I see. No, we're not going to do that. That's not
okay.
Happening.
Good. Anyway, watched a couple movies, watched La La Land. Finally, I can't believe I hadn't seen that yet. I think y'all know I like musicals. I loved this. I thought it was so good. It deserved all the awards it got. Rewatch Lilo and Stitch, one of my favorite Disney movies, very unsung movie. I think it's a really good story. The artwork is beautiful. And one of my favorite weird Disney characters. Speaking of Disney, we watched the free Disney Pixar movie Onward. I mean, good story. It was good. Just didn't live up to Pixar. I have a hard time understanding why that came out of Pixar and not just Disney Studios. And then finally, I watched Code 8, one of the new movies on Netflix. It was okay. It wasn't great. First half was slow. Second half was pretty good, but it was all right. And that is it for me. Less news than I've normally been watching. Less podcasts than I would normally listen to. So, you know, I'm behind there. Josh, what have you been up to?
A decent mix of stuff here. So we'll start with games, because that's where the majority of it is. Of course, some NHL 20. I feel like I'm going to be saying for a while now, of course, some Call of Duty, because man, this new Call of Duty is so good. Playing it a lot. I really like it. I did play more of Forza Street, that mobile game that we talked about last week. I think I'm done. It's not that fun. It's really not
that fun. I can't believe you're saying that about a Forza brand. I mean, I know you were disappointed with it, but it's shocking.
It's a boring mobile game. It's just boring. Like the car collecting might be cool if it made the game any different, but it doesn't really. Yeah, so it's boring. I should uninstall that and get 1.7 gigs back on my phone. Played some more of Ori and the Will of the Wisp. Dude, that game is getting so hard. Like, too hard.
You said it was pretty easy initially.
No, I said that the escape sequences were easy.
Okay.
And that the regular gameplay was felt harder than the previous game.
Oh, okay.
So escape sequences are way easier this time around. Boss fights, oh my gosh, so hard. And I'm at a boss fight now that I don't know how I will ever beat. Like, if it will let me out of it and let me go back and do other things and make my character stronger and stuff like that, maybe. This is feeling a lot less fun and a little bit more like work. And that's not what I want right now. And it's not what I want from Ori. I freaking loved Ori and the Blind Forest. And so much of this game is really good too. But gosh, if I could just invite Joe over and let him play the boss fights for me, then maybe it would be okay. But I can't. So anyway, that's Ori. And that's really it for my video games of late. I finished an audiobook. I've been working through the Dark Tower series, Stephen King book. I finished The Wastelands. I think that's book 3. Maybe it's 4. I'm not sure. But I finished that one. And then the next book in the series, there's, I don't know, like a 5 or 6 week wait on it or whatever. So I decided I'm going to listen to The Stand. Like, everyone has always said that The Stand is one of Stephen King's best books ever. But there's no way I would ever be able to read it because it's like 1,200 pages long or something right. Like that.
So how many hours is that?
It is 47 hours. Like, the only way that I'm going to get through this in one borrow is if I just don't listen to any podcast. So this is going to take me at least 2 borrows, I'm sure, to get through it. But I think
has your library extended your borrow time? Because ours has.
Of digital stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, huh. They basically like doubled down in their investment in digital so that they could extend their borrowing times.
Not that I've noticed so far, but I think I've got access to 1 or 2 libraries. I could add some more and see if that's different. But no, that would be really useful for The Stand because holy cow. Even at 1.75x, that's going to take a while. I'm not going to do the math, but it's going to take a while.
Yeah.
And then lastly, I did watch part of a movie this week. Again, because I'm bad at figuring out studios and which studios made which movies. But John Wick was on YouTube last week, last Friday. I don't remember which studio it was, but they did like 3 or 4 weeks in a row where they were doing like major pictures that they were streaming on YouTube, and then they would do like short intermissions. But you would get like 45 minutes of show before they would do an intermission. So
this was like live streaming?
Yeah. Yep.
Huh.
Yeah. They had Jamie Lee Curtis like hosting the event, which I'm not sure why her, because she's not in the movie as far as I know.
Right.
But so I did watch some of that. I probably watched half of it, maybe 2/3 of it. It just wasn't for me. Like, it's
Josh.
Just, it is just violence. It's just violence. With
I loved these movies.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
And it's, I don't have problems with violence. Like, I watch lots of really violent stuff, but it just kind of felt pointless. Like, and I know that I'm saying that as like the biggest Fast and the Furious fan in the world. So, like, the plot was...
The irony is not lost on you.
Not at all. Not at all. The plot was more meaningful and maybe more, you know, something you could sympathize with more so than a Fast and the Furious movie. But, dude, it's just, all right, I'm going to walk into this room and shoot 12 dudes in the face. And then we're going to have a 3-minute scene of some other people talking. And then it's the next scene of shooting 12 more dudes in the face. And that's all it is.
I think the reason that that didn't bother me is that they didn't, is that they underplayed the gore of it.
Yes, it was not very gory. At least I didn't feel like it was very gory.
Right. Right.
Jen didn't agree. She was not watching. She was in the room with me with headphones on, looking at her phone or whatever, but occasionally she'd look up. I mean, it's not like you can be in the same room and not watch 100 people get murdered. You know, that's apparently what these movies are.
Yep. So. I love them. I haven't seen the third one yet. I still have to watch that.
I got to imagine it's available on digital and stuff, right?
Oh, I have it. I bought it.
Oh, Jesus.
After watching the first one, and I forget when I watched it, or how I watched it, but then I was like, oh, these are awesome. We'll rent the second one. And then after I loved that as much as I did, as soon as the third one came out, I had pre-ordered it. So I just haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
Well, I'm hoping that I'm going to make some time for Ford versus Ferrari. Like, I've not seen that movie. I've known the story of it because that's the type of racing I'm into. I've known that story for years. And love that story. So I can't wait to see the movie version of it. That's like, I think the Rotten Tomatoes score is over 90%. So I'm really excited to watch it.
It did well. I think it's funny that like of the new movies that are available, you want to see Ford versus Ferrari and I want to see the current wars. It's totally fitting.
What the? I don't even know what that is.
The current wars is between like Tesla and and Edison and the I forget who the third guy was, but basically the people who were not inventing electricity but discovering electricity.
Right.
You
know? Yeah. That sounds interesting. I just didn't know.
And it's so me.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. I think you're probably nerdier than me.
I don't know about Josh.
That's a tough competition. Yeah, I guess I am a computer programmer by trade, so maybe that's enough to push me over the top, but I don't know. All right. That's it for what's going on in my entertainment center and what's going on for this show. So if you'd like to get a hold of us, we're on Twitter. Richard's handle is at Richard Gunther. Mine's at Josh Pollard. The website is at DigiMediaZone. We're all sorts of other social places, Instagram, Facebook, all of that is over on the website. Find all of our show notes over at thedigitalmediazone.com. And then come back next week to join us for the live show here. We had a bunch of people joining us tonight. John and Anthony and GP3 and like lots of fun activity going on over there. We typically do this Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Please show up and join in because you, as you've heard, you're very much a part of the show when you show up for the live stream. So that is going to do it for episode 519. He's Richard Gunther. I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.